All right, good morning, good morning. I'm Katie Miglin with the Teach Better team, and I'm here with Mr. Jed Deary-Berry. We are so excited today. It is not Ray, it is me. So we're gonna talk shop and get into some shenanigans. Why don't you fill up your coffee? Because we decided we definitely need that this morning.
Definitely need
And
some.
yeah, exactly. And we'll be back in just a few seconds. All right, good morning, good morning. I'm Katie Miglin with the Teach Better team, and this is our daily drop-in where we come every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 7 a.m. Eastern to talk shop with educators all over the world. And today I have the pleasure of getting to talk to Jed Deary-Berry. Jed, good morning. How
Good
are you?
morning.
I loved the dancing.
Yeah. I forget that you can see that when it's playing behind the scenes there, but it's too good not to dance. And it makes me feel good. I already felt good coming on here to chat with you. I feel like I'm having the trifecta of daily drop-in because I've been with Ray, I've been with Jeff, now I've been with you. Is there anybody else out there on the team that does these lives that I need to come on and chat
Well,
with them?
there's Brad every Friday, so I think we need to schedule you for a Friday.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, I feel like I need to have everybody covered,
I agree.
because I just love y'all. Y'all are doing great work. And every time that I'm on the show and y'all say you do this Monday through Friday, every morning at 7 a.m., it just blows me away. That is such dedication to a program. I love it. So thank you for what you're doing and putting out there. I wish I could say that I watched every single episode. I don't because I'm not always awake at 7.
That's okay. And we were discussing how it's 7 a.m. your time, it's 6 a.m. my time, but you're also on break. So I
I
think
am on break. Yeah, I am on break, but I'm very much up and about this morning. I have a lot of things I'm working on. The next book is coming out in October, and Julie and I got our first round of edits that we're processing. And so as soon as I turn off the camera here, I'm jetting out the door to meet Julie, and we have a full day of work ahead of us. That's why I put on my fun flamingo shirt today. I don't know if
Oh, I
you
like it.
can you see my flamingo shirt?
Yeah, I
I
do.
just felt like I need a little bit of fun today, so
Yeah, and it's a Tuesday. It's we're
Tuesday.
out of the Mondays. I feel like, yeah, we're ready for this. Well, good morning, everybody. We see some people dropping in. Feel free to drop us a comment of what you're drinking. We've got you're drinking tea, right? I'm drinking coffee.
Yes.
Okay,
Jeff
so
in the comments. Love it.
yep, good morning, Jeff. And I just want to say that I'm not usually the host. I'm usually in your seat. So I think that means that we can kind of do whatever we want.
Absolutely. And you know what? I kind of have a history of being that guest where we just do whatever.
I like it.
We went off the rails a little bit with Jeff last time, and I'm okay with it.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, me too. We are going to get into some good news stories. We've got some holidays. Unfortunately, I was really hoping we'd have some ridiculous off the wall holiday, and we don't. They're kind of basic today, but that's okay.
I'm just playing. It's okay.
Right. But we are going to get into our brainstorming and kind of talk shop. So first, let's do introductions. I know you have been in our community for a while. I know you have been on our 12-hour. You've been on Daily Drop-In multiple times. But for people who maybe have missed all those things, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're at, what you do, what do you value do you provide to education?
So that's a loaded question, depending on what time of day you ask me. But right now, on this day, I think I call myself an educator of educators at this point in my career. I'm training the next generation of educators in my adjunct work, and I help equip, encourage, and empower educators through professional development that is meaningful, relevant, and fun, not another PowerPoint, not another boring sit and get presentation. And I do that through playful teaching, through playful learning, and I use a lot of the arts And in my free time, I wrote a book called The Playful Classroom and then followed it up with a book called The Courageous Classroom and just finished a brand new book that's out of the education sphere, but it's still educational, but it's not for educators. It's called Okay. So it's a book that definitely teaches you something, right? It's a, yeah. I guess you could call it a self-help book.
Okay.
But it's called The Playful Life. We got so much feedback from The Playful Classroom and said, man, we love this for our classrooms, but we need this book for our everyday life. How do we make our everyday lives more playful? And we started getting that feedback also from non-educators who were reading our book. We had lots of non-official teachers reading our book. And let me tell you who those people are. Like when we wrote it specifically for, you know, classroom teachers, primarily public school educators, because that was our sphere that we worked with.
Right.
But then, you know, homeschool moms started picking up the book, and then people who led 4-H clubs or people who volunteered for Special Olympics, people who ran camps with the American Camp Association started picking up the book and said, hey, you know, the Playful Classroom is anywhere that you teach.
Yeah.
And they're right. And so there are teachers out there who are well beyond just the regular brick and mortar school.
Right.
That then said, hey, we need this book for our everyday life as well. So we went to the publishers. We said, we have this idea. We think we could write a whole nother book just for the everyday folk. And we did it. And it's coming out in October.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I cannot wait, because I think it will introduce the playful teaching aspect to the people that are outside of the classroom. And I hope that that's going to build the understanding and appreciation and the value of playfulness in our teaching and our learning.
So you had your first book was on specifically playful classroom. It was, you really kind of had that traditional classroom in mind.
Yes.
And then you went to Playful Life, but what? Right. Tell me a little bit more about the second book, The Courageous Classroom.
The second book, I got it right here. I'll show you a picture of it. This is called The Courageous Classroom.
Yeah.
You can see this is well loved. Look, it's all torn up on the back. I've been using it. This is a very different book than The Playful Classroom, Playful Life. This is The Courageous Classroom. I wrote it with fantastic author, Dr. Janet Taylor, who is a psychiatrist. Who was in the middle of writing a book all about fear and trauma and how it is affecting our students across the board, and how that comes into the classroom and how teachers just aren't adequately trained on how to handle that, how their trauma has turned into fears that are very triggering throughout their day, and teachers need to be aware of it. But also we wrote about how teachers come into schools with their own trauma. I'm very open and honest in the book about my own childhood. There were some things that happened in my childhood that shouldn't happen to any child, that I carried with me through school, and I carried it right into the classroom with me when I taught early childhood. And that changes your perspective on how you help others who are dealing with that trauma. It helps you. I feel like it was valuable for me. I mean, I wish I hadn't gone through it. I would much rather say that I had never been through those things, but those things definitely gave me insight in how to help students that were in my classroom. And so it's a very heavy book compared to the other two.
Okay.
But the publisher reached out and said, hey, we have this psychiatrist and she really needs a teacher voice in the book, and we think that you could add to that. And so they paired us together and we wrote the book, and it's a book I'm very proud of. The Playful Classroom does get a little more press, I think, because it's where people are drawn to it right now. And the fabulous cover by Peter Reynolds. I don't know if you've seen the cover, but Peter Reynolds, he did that cover for us. And so that it draws people to it. Suddenly, you remember what we talked about, live TV? Suddenly, all my books just fell on the floor. I just don't know how. And there they're going to stay. But I was like, oh, no, they're falling and I can't do anything about it.
We were right before we jumped on, we were talking about interruptions while we're live. And I shared that my kids like to wake up right as we go live and sometimes we'll jump in. And so I think you just modeled it, that it's life.
I did.
Live
I tried to, you know, one of the best bits of advice I ever got as an educator I was a trainer for the district I worked with, a technology trainer. I would teach other teachers how to use Promethean board in their classroom. This was right when they first, right when they were first getting big, like 2007, 2008 or whatever. And the person who trained us from the district office, she said, the first thing that you have know how to do when you're teaching or anytime you're live in front of people, you have to know how to fix your face. And I was like, what's that? You know, and fix your face. You have to make sure that your face does not communicate your internal dialogue or internal emotion. And so inside, I was very panicked that those books were going to fall and make a big loud noise. But I was trying to be like, hey, fix my face, right? But they didn't make too bad of a noise. It was okay. Katie?
No, I honestly probably wouldn't
that,
even.
Do that. Fix your face. That's it.
I always think it's funny when, you know, like when Facebook or YouTube, they get like the screenshot of like when you go to share a video and it's never be like a good face. You know, it's never like the smiling moment. It's always like the weird.
And, you know, I mentioned the show that I do on YouTube and it automatically makes a thumbnail for you. It gives you the option to go back and create your own thumbnail.
Mm-hmm.
That takes hours if you do that for every video, because then you've got to scroll through and look for where you find just the right face for you. But if then what about your guest and the odds of you both having the just right face at just right time? It'll suck life out of you. Don't just go with whatever YouTube gives you and just laugh about it. That's all I can say.
All right, that's good advice. But
my face is usually like this.
Yes, I feel like I always am like deep in thought. You know, it's like like I'm like so mad or angry. So you've mentioned tons of good stuff today. I feel like this is that, you know, we're getting good insight, but you did just mention your show, which is a reason that you get up in the morning and you record. We talked about this. Yep. So can you share a little bit about your recent show that you, it's kind of new, right?
It is. Yeah. I just this morning, I think episode 12, I think it was, I did it 5 minutes ago before we got on here and I've already forgotten which one it was. But the episode just dropped, this morning. It is a show. I just wanted to start connecting with people that I follow and that follow me back on social media. Specifically, I wanted to connect with them in a moment of play that got their day started on this right foot. You know, when we play, even right now, what we're doing is playful. Even though we had to get up early, there's a playful spirit that's here because we're laughing, we're being silly, we're telling funny stories. Storytelling is absolutely a form of play. It's one of the 8 play personalities we talk about in the book. Telling jokes and laughing is a form of storytelling, a form of play also. So what's happening in our brains right now is that we're kind of forgetting about all the things that we've got to do for the day. They're out of our mind. Not exactly. They're back here in our default mode network. The default mode network is still processing all those things. And so when we're having these moments of play, as soon as we're done, then our brain's going to be like, okay, it'll start firing again. And it'll be stronger because while we're playing, all of these neurotransmitters are popping in our brain. Catecholamine, serotonin, you know, dopamine. It's all being released while we play. And if you watch that last episode I was on with Jeff, serotonin has a big benefit, and we won't go into it again, but it does have to do with your digestive system, which is very important. But anyway, the show was my opportunity to connect with the people who follow me on social media in a playful experience in the mornings. And I have 30-minute spots from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And you can, if you go to my Instagram page, which is at Mr. Dairyberry, the link is in my bio. Jeff said, here we go again. No, I turned it around, Jeff. I turned it around. I didn't go down the same path. But there's a link in my bio there on the Instagram channel where you can sign up for your spot. And I do it early in the morning because I want it to have this feel of like we're just waking up. We understand that play is valuable for us, so we're going to start our day with a moment of play. Some people start their day with a moment of meditation or prayer, devotion, or just maybe just sitting in solitude with their coffee. I have found just in the time that the days where I do record, the rest of my day is so productive because I got up early. I started playing. My brain is just like fired up. Mm-hmm. Ideas are flowing. And I've had this really cool connection. And some of the people that have been on the show, I don't even know them. They just follow me on social media and I don't even know who they are, but they just signed up, said, "Hey, this looks like fun. I want to be on your show." And so I'm meeting new people and making friends while I'm playing. It's fun.
I think that it's such a unique way to start your day. Cause you and I talked about, you know, different ways you start your day. One of them being working out. That's a common thing people do, but really play, it kind of brings that in. It brings that like that, you know, getting your mind moving in a different way, in a unique way. But I love that it's so positive. You know, we both kind of laughed about sometimes in the morning, you don't want to do something until it's over. And then you're like, oh, that was a good idea. Yeah. So it's like, it gives you that positive spin on the day. And I think it is so cool that, you know, you said every Tuesday and Thursday,
yeah,
you have a different start to your day and it's positive and fun. And yeah, I love that.
Yeah, when I first started filming, my goal was to just drop one a week.
Okay.
But so many people signed up right away and I recorded so many up front. I have enough to drop two a week.
Awesome.
So I drop the episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays and then I record Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, no worries. And then, but like what I do, sometimes it's very simple. Like, I'll give you an example of a very simple thing that I did. Like, do you know Carly and Adam who do the STEAM workshops?
I don't think so.
Carly and Adam, they do, it's called Carly and Adam STEM.
Okay.
Anyway, I had this journal here where we looked up in this journal, a page where it talked about exploring words. And we grabbed books nearby and explored words that were in there. And we made up a silly story that goes with all the words that we found in the books, right?
Yeah.
And it was funny. And we built connections with words. And some people say, well, that's not playful. But it was very playful if you watch the episode. It was very playful because we were laughing, being silly. But then other times, like I might have, like I have this little cup nearby. Uh-huh. I just did this episode and I grab a cup. So the person went and grabbed a cup. It was actually a team of people. From an administrative team in a school that I work with in Texas. And mm-hmm. I said, and get some scrap paper. And then we just set the cup up about a foot from us. And we had the cameras down like this, you mm-hmm. know? And we were like, I said, oh, okay, on your mark, get set, go. And we started throwing our paper. And all we were doing was just throwing the paper at the cup. And the first person that got all the paper in the cup was the winner. And that was awesome. It, you know? So it's just random little things of play. Yesterday's episode was one of my favorite that I've recorded. I can't wait for it to drop. You and I talked about Wordle before the show started. Yesterday I just made up this thing called Drawdle, and Drawdle is I have an image in my head and I'm going to draw it one piece at a time and see if you can guess it in a certain number of guesses. And the person that was on the other end, she loved it. And then I mixed it with Wordle. Because every time she would guess, I would let her know if she got a letter in the final answer. So it was a little bit of word and drawing. And it was fun. And I did it over here on my whiteboard.
Oh, yeah.
Put that little poster down and then just did it right there. So it's, I don't know, my office invites playfulness here. And yeah. I just, you know, every morning is something different. And that's what else I love, too, is that I'm coming up with a different idea of every episode.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get to 100 episodes, I'm going to put it all in a book again or something, maybe 50. I don't know. Cause it'll be 50 ways to start your day with Mom and Play.
Well, and what I love about it is it's, you guys are adults that are doing it. You know, you're modeling with adults.
Yeah.
How easy would it be for you to take those simple things and start your day in the classroom with it? And I think literally any grade level could do that. You know, I teach middle school. They would love it.
Yeah.
It's such a fun, like, and it doesn't take long. Like you just showed us, you know, many games in a few minutes.
The average episode is between 12 and 15 minutes. And that includes me introducing the guests, us chatting a little bit, bantering back and forth about what's going on. It's just, it doesn't take it long at all. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that about taking it into the classroom. The show is for anybody. It's not for educators. It's for anybody. But every time that an educator comes on, I make sure to say, look, we did this. Think about how you could make this in your classroom. And one of the things that I say to every teacher that I meet, they will say to me, oh, well, we can't do all this in our math class or in our ELA class. We don't have time. Okay, I get that. I've been there. I know that you don't have time. You look for the nooks and crannies of your schedule first. And we all have nooks and crannies where there's a minute or two that is unattached to anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then I also say is, you know, teachers love to say, oh, I can't put anything else on my plate. Play is not something else on your plate. Play is the plate. Play is where you're putting all the things that you already have to do. You have to do math, make it playful. Yeah. If you have to do ELA, make it playful. If you have to take attendance every day before 9 a.m., figure out a way to make it playful.
I love that.
You know, that is, play is the plate. It's not an extra thing on your plate. It is the plate. And I've been trying to help people understand that. And I think it's slowly starting to happen in the network of people that I'm working with. I mentioned the school in Texas that I had worked with. It is an amazing school. It's an early childhood school. It's just for 4K. Mm-hmm. It's a public school in the district, but they put all their 4K students in one building, and there's 28 classes of 4K students. Can you even fathom what that looks like?
Honestly, my first thought was, how loud is that school?
Well, it is loud because they're learning. And right. Their classrooms are amazing. And get this. Each teacher doesn't have their own classroom. You know, in a traditional school, especially in early childhood, each teacher has their own classroom. And that's where the kids stay all year. Every 3 weeks, these teachers rotate to a new classroom with a new theme and new playful experiences. And it is amazing what they're doing. So like the first 3 weeks, you might be in a transportation room. The next 3 weeks, you might be in a farm room. The next 3 weeks, you might be in the community helpers room. And they do it every 3 weeks. And then when they're done with there's 8 rooms. And when they're done with that rotation, they go and do it again with all new curriculum. It's amazing. It's absolutely
amazing. That's a unique idea.
Look, I'm telling you, they are leading the way, I think, in innovative thinking at that school. They're not doing it with one piece of technology. It's not the technology is not, I mean, they are using like a whiteboard right. in their room or whatever. But what I mean is that they're being innovative, and the innovation is not through technology. It's through a forward thinking process of let's try something different in this class. Let's try something different in the school. Each classroom has this big mural painted on the back that is representative of the theme. They use the things from the mural in their classroom. They have playful stations all around the classroom. And part of the training that I've been bringing to them is helping them how to make those stations more purposefully playful. Weave in a story through the centers so that you don't just have centers in isolation, so that the centers are connected as they travel around the room. It's amazing. It's called Belton Early Childhood School. And
you said it's in a public school district.
Belton Independent School District. And this particular school is just the school in the district where the 4K students go. It's incredible. And I'm so glad that I've got to be a part of it this year. And I'm going to get to go back in August and do some more work with them next school year. It's such a, I can't even believe I get to be a part of it. Every time I go down there, awe of what those ladies are doing in that building. It's incredible.
I kind of want to go. Do you think that they would take a 35-year-old? I
totally think they would take you. Now, they might put you to work after, you know, they'd let you be there for a learner for a few days, but then they'd put you to work. You know, 28 classes of 4-year-olds, you need all the hands you can get.
Oh my gosh. I'm tired just thinking about that, honestly.
Let me tell you this, though. The first time I went, it was in August before students were there.
Mm-hmm.
The second time I went was in October, and I could not wait to get there because I was like, I got to see this building with all these kids in here.
Yeah.
The school, it ran like a machine. Those students knew exactly what to do. They knew how to walk down the hall. They knew how to act in their classroom. I thought, no way is dismissal going to be. A dismissal will be, it'll be herding cats. You know, I knew it would be crazy. Mm-mm. Those teachers had those kids, even by October, they're just barely 4 years old in October. You know, they're still almost, you know,
wow. And
it was, I'm telling you, every teacher in America needs to go visit that school just to see dismissal.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was.
You get some people dropping in the comments. Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, Marie. Ray.
Ray is here. Boss lady is here. We have to be on our best.
See the boss lady.
Well, we actually we're gonna kind of shift gears. We'll keep talking, but this is the time of the show where we talk through our brainstorm bank, and I know you're familiar with that. Yep. But it's where we kind of talk through a specific theme, and mm-hmm. so we're gonna kind of jump into that. Are you good with that?
I'm good with it.
All right, here we go.
Go ahead. Do the show.
Yeah, we got a commercial, so give us about 10 seconds. All right. Welcome back. I'm Katie Miglin with the Teach Better team, and I'm with Mr. Jed Deerberry. If you haven't been listening, we have talked about a big school with small kids. We've talked about books, playfulness, all the good things. But now we are going to kind of shift gears and talk through our theme this week, which is being an advocate in the classroom and kind of elevating some maybe hidden voices, which I know is something you are super passionate about, Jed. And so I'm super excited to kind of see where this conversation goes. So go ahead.
I was gonna say I am too, because I didn't know the theme. And so this brainstorm is really going to be raw, because I haven't given any thought until right now. So I don't even know what you're about, all the questions you're about to ask me. But you said the theme was about sharing. What was the theme? I'm sorry.
Being an advocate for hidden voices in the classroom.
Yeah. There are so many hidden voices in your classroom, especially in that third, fourth, fifth grade age range. You know, first and second grade, not a lot's hidden because they share it. They tell everything, right?
Yes. I have a first grader and I love getting emails from her teacher about things she shares.
I taught first and second grade for the entirety of my 13-year classroom stint in elementary. I did loop to third grade 1 year, but I got out of that real fast because the older they get, the harder I just it's harder for me.
Okay.
But the one thing I know from my own experience and dealing with students as college students and my nieces and knowing how they've gotten older, the older kids get, the quieter they get. Mm-hmm. With those things that maybe whether they're bullied about, the things that make them different, the things that should be celebrated about their beauty and uniqueness. Because what happens is we learn that there are some things that society doesn't want us to talk about. So we quiet ourselves down. And so I love that you're highlighting that this week, advocating for those who are in those quiet spaces that we don't mm-hmm. hear about as much. There are students with learning disabilities in your classroom mm-hmm. that don't feel representation. There mm-hmm. are students of LGBTQ families that don't feel representation. Mm-hmm. They themselves aren't a member of that community, but they maybe have moms and dads who are, or cousins and aunts and grandpas. In the county where I live, there was a little girl who wrote a story about her dad or her grandpa, who's a drag queen on the weekends.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Which is fabulous. I think it's fabulous that she has that kind of grandpa, you know?
Yeah.
Doing that work. And she wrote a story about it at her elementary school, and her elementary school would not allow it to be published in the school anthology because it was inappropriate. But that was definitely a hidden voice that should have been amplified. Mm-hmm. They were worried about what the community would think instead of worrying about how removing it would crush that student.
And the family, yeah.
And the family. But I said specifically the student, because the student was in fourth grade. The student was finding the courage to share their true self, their true family. Mm-hmm. And now that student was taught that was inappropriate.
Right.
And I just have all kinds of trouble with that, because that's her family. You know, that's what that's their life. And a drag queen is just a man in a costume. That's mm-hmm. all it is, you know. It's the people who make it into something sexual. Now, granted, you know, their costumes can be a little risque sometimes, but every time I've seen a drag queen do a show at a public library, they realize that they're going to a public library and dress accordingly. I've not seen a drag queen in a G-string doing a read aloud at a public library.
I hope not, man.
I haven't seen that. And if I did, I would say that's inappropriate. You shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing that in front of children. I would absolutely. But,
you know, I think I think you brought up a good point about like there is a point where it is a shift. You know, I see that too. I, like I said, I have a first grader and I see just there's certain things that kind of shift as they get a little bit older. Yeah. And now I teach, you know, I teach middle school. I have my entire career and there are students who are super open and you hear every thought that comes to mind, but there's a good population. And I don't know that it's always necessarily society. It could also just be what their family or what they're exposed to, you know, has taught them that either this shouldn't be talked about or this should be kind of hidden. And it is kind of sad because you want every student to feel heard and valued no matter what background or beliefs or whatever they come from. And it's a challenge.
I had a student one time who came from a multiracial family. Mom was Black, dad was white.
Okay.
And the student, very clearly, he didn't seem to fit in to either of those racial groups.
Okay.
And I would watch him on the playground, you know, I would say I watch him on the playground. It wasn't like I was intentionally just watching him. It was after noticing some behaviors, having some talks with the parents, you know, and he didn't seem to fit in with either group. And his mom told me that the white kids viewed him as Black and the Black kids viewed him as white, and there weren't enough multiracial kids in the grade level that he didn't have a group of people that were him, that represented him. So how do you recognize that? How do you help that hidden voice of that student? Mm-hmm. You do it through literature. You do it through pictures. You do it through stories of people like him. You find videos on Scholastic that represent those students, and you use those in your classroom because that student needs to feel seen and heard and part of society. Mm-hmm. So that they don't have to, you know, go through this awkward experience of like, well, where do I belong? You know,
yeah.
Because all of us, we go through that just in our existence anyway. Where do I belong? Definitely. But it's harder. It's even harder when it's a part of a community that's maybe largely seen as marginalized, you know?
Well, I think you hit it spot on. Every person goes through that challenge, even in a very minor scale, you know, even if you identify with the people that you're surrounded with, you identify with your classmates, whatever it is, you still have to find you and you still have to figure out who you are. And I think that's so valuable that is a part of life, but it's there is a group that they go through that challenge naturally, but then they still can't connect. And I think that's where the hidden voices lie. And I do like that there's advocates out there. You know, you can follow any Teachergram out there that advocates for students, whether it's through books or through, you know, different activities in the classroom that really kind of leverages that, which is so valuable. So I like that there is a shift in, you know, society to an extent.
I think if we'd be doing a disservice to not mention too that lots of states are fighting battles right now that are making some of these topics illegal. To mention, because they've conflated what they think is happening with the reality of what is happening, and the two are not the same.
Right.
You know, elementary teachers certainly are not instigating conversations that are inappropriate for children. They're just not doing it. Now, there might be a lone wolf out there that does something inappropriate, but that's every career in every profession.
Exactly.
In every community, there's somebody that could be doing that. But largely, those are not conversations that are happening. But like this, I you saw me lean over because I wanted to talk. This was on topic. And then we went to multiracial. So just beautiful segue here. This book. Do you know this book?
No, but I love the cover.
You must get this book. It should be in every classroom, not just a lot of. I teach children's literature as one of my adjunct courses.
Okay.
I'm very passionate about helping people understand that children's literature, just because it says children's literature, I have learned more about the world from children's literature than any novel I've ever picked up. I'm just going to tell you, because you can read this in 5 minutes and take away from this what a novel takes you days to read, you know?
And it's so simple. Do you notice that? Children's books, like I read books to my daughters and I'm like, man, why is there a 500 book published on this?
Yeah.
With all this research, like this has got it. It's
Yeah, definitely. What subject do you teach in middle school? I don't know that.
I teach math, so.
You teach math. Well, I'm sure there's something you could do with this book, even in your math class, if we got to it.
Perfect.
But it's called Uncle Bobby's Wedding, and you see the cover. The white guy's Uncle Bobby. The black guy is Jamie, which is Uncle Bobby's boyfriend. But what I love about this book, nowhere in this book does it say, oh, Uncle Bobby's got a boyfriend, you know? Uh-huh. Oh, Uncle Bobby's gay, you know? Oh, Uncle Bobby's queer, you know, in our queer community. It doesn't do that. It just says, hey, Uncle Bobby's getting married. And he's getting married to Jamie. And the little girl right here, I think her name is Sophia. Let me see if it says on the back. I can't remember. I'm going to have to look because it's going to drive me crazy if I don't look it up. I think it's Sophia.
It's just natural.
Oh, Chloe is her name. Chloe.
Yeah. Okay.
So Chloe is sad because Uncle Bobby is getting married and she feels like she's going to lose her uncle. You know, how many kids have been in that situation where maybe even their own parent is getting remarried and they feel like they're going to lose a parent? You know, so this has some really good themes in it. But then Uncle Bobby introduces her to Jamie. She loves Jamie. They go to the zoo. They go to the amusement park. They have a picnic. And then by the end, she realizes that she's getting an extra uncle. She's not losing Uncle Bobby. She's getting Uncle Jamie. What I love about this book is that it introduces you to not only a gay couple, but it introduces you to a multiracial couple. There's nothing inappropriate about this book.
Right.
If you replaced Jamie with a female character, nobody would say anything about this book.
Yep.
It would say, oh, such a good book for helping kids understand change. Because that's what it's about. They just happen to use a same-sex multiracial couple to do that. And that is what bothers people. They think that's inappropriate. There's nothing sexual about that. There's no mention of anything inappropriate in that book. Mm-hmm. I would read that book to a kindergartner. There's nothing inappropriate in there. And it does, it allows a hidden voice to be seen, multiple hidden voices.
And it's subtle. Like it's not, I think what you're saying is so accurate and that it doesn't have to be. Like, you know, I think sometimes, and I know I've personally struggled with this, where I feel like I have to highlight to allow the hidden voices to be heard. You know, it's like, I have to show that I'm doing something to highlight it. And it doesn't have to be, it can be just a natural part of, like you said, it's just literally two people getting married and talking about change, but they were able to leverage those hidden voices by the character choice. I think that's awesome.
I think there are times when we absolutely must be intentional about hidden voices. Like if you're in a school right now and a student asks you to process, you know, the shooting that happened in Buffalo, you've got to lean into that and be intentional and talk about the facts of that, you know, who that guy was, what he did. But there are other times when you just read a book.
Yeah.
And you let the book speak for itself. Another hidden voice that I think is valuable in that book is Chloe, the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Her fears are a hidden voice. Her worries, her concerns are a hidden voice that it took her a minute to voice those, you know? And then when she did voice them, was she heard or was she dismissed? Oh, you don't have anything to worry about, you know? They didn't dismiss her. Uncle Bobby said, oh, let me come and let me help you meet Jamie and get to know Jamie. So there's lots of hidden voices in that book. And honestly, almost every children's book you pick up, there's a hidden voice in there. It's trying to scream to get out. That's why they wrote the book.
Yeah. And it's just so subtle and it doesn't, you know, sometimes I think as adults, we make things more complicated. And so I think it's great. Bree just dropped in the comments, books and play, best day ever. And I could not agree more. I think this has been such a fun conversation to talk about because being an advocate can look different in so many ways, but I think you're bringing up such a good point that just bring in some children's books because they can speak volumes when sometimes us as adults, we don't have the right words.
Yeah. Absolutely, that you said it beautifully there. Sometimes we don't have the right words, and these authors do. And they spent years thinking of the story, and the illustrators spent years creating these beautiful pictures. And a lot of times, the pictures will say things that the words can't.
Yeah.
You know, Uncle Bobby's wedding is a classic example. If you flip through the pictures, it says a lot with the pictures that the words never say. So, yeah, get build your children's library. I'm going to take my camera back and give you all a live shot of just part of my library here. Forgive the mess, but as you scroll down, see all these are all children's books, and these are all books that I have bought since I left elementary. Yeah, every one of these are books that I bought since I left the elementary classroom, because I left all my books in the classroom for the teacher who was taking over after me. I did take a little set of my Arthur books, you know, Arthur the Aardvark.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of him, and I had quite a collection of those, so I took those with me. But all the ones on those shelves that you see are ones that I've bought since 2015 to use in my children's lit courses and to use in my professional development. Anybody who's ever been in a professional development with me has probably seen me talk about The Dot by Peter Reynolds. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a hidden voice in that book. Mm-hmm. Vashti, the main character, she's sitting at the desk and she's in a grumpy mood. And the teacher starts to hear her hidden voice of, there's something bigger going on here. What's happening? And it finally comes out. Vashti says, I can't draw. And that's why she's in a grumpy mood in her art class. And her teacher uses that voice to equip, encourage her to, you know, change her mindset. And next thing you know, she's an artist at the art show featuring all her dots.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, and children's books honestly can teach us as adults stuff too. You know, I think when I think of a typical day, and I'm sure you remember being a teacher too, where it's just busy. You're on the go. You're thinking of the next step, and you're making 100 decisions a minute. And it is so easy sometimes to dismiss in that moment what feels like a minor situation. You know, a student is frustrated because they can't draw. A student's frustrated because they can't solve a math problem. And it's so easy to, you know, just try to kind of, okay, we can keep moving. But I think sometimes children's books remind us to take that intentional pause and really kind of look at what's going on and take the second to have the conversation or reflect or, you know, have a conversation with the student, which is sometimes we as adults need to be reminded. And I think it's great that you've reminded of us of that, whether it's through the play or through reading books. I think that's been a really good reminder, especially as we get into the end of the year. I know people might be feeling stressed about getting through their curriculum or making those relationships. You know, it's that constant balance, right? Do I spend more time with the relationships? Do I spend time on the curriculum? How do I balance it? And you've provided us some easy and simple ways to still manage both, which is great.
I'm glad I could do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to switch. This is actually one of my favorite parts of the segment of the good news and the holidays. I personally love the good news because I started incorporating into my classroom every day. So I found a good news story for us, and I found some quirky holidays. You ready to jump into that?
Can't wait to hear them. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, we are getting into our good news segment, or section of this segment. And I love the good news. I love starting my day with some positivity. Jed, you have already started my day with that. So honestly, we could have scrapped this story and been good, but
this is vital to the daily drop-in. We have to have this.
This is true. It's true. And I think I'd get fired if I didn't bring it up. But I personally love using these in my classroom. I teach, my first section is language arts, which is writing. And I only teach one section of it. And I'm not going to lie, as a math teacher, teaching writing sometimes can make me very crabby because it's not in my wheelhouse. So I started doing this when Daily Drop-In actually came out in August. And I read a good news story every day. And if nothing else, if the kids are completely ignoring me, at least I have some good news in my day. So
yeah. It's a feel-good moment for you at the very least.
Exactly. So I found this story, and I honestly felt like it was fate since I was the one that, you know, was hosting today. But I'm big into games, Jed. I don't know if you're big into like games as an adult, you know,
like board games.
Board games, but I also like the minute to win it games. I mean,
Yeah. I've done some minute games on my show that I talked about. Yeah.
Exactly. So I like, anytime people come over to our house, they just know to expect like big games, and you know, you just have to deal with it. I require it. So this one is a story. It's called One Man's Treasure Hunt Thrilled a Canadian Town, Turning Strangers into Friends. And so essentially, there was a horror-themed treasure hunt in this small Canadian town. And they had this guy had created this whole treasure hunt, and it was all supposed to be spooky, and they would go to haunted like places. And so it says locals were sure that nothing of the sort had ever gripped the town of 17,000 quite like it, and for getting people out of the house after so many COVID restrictions. So essentially they did this because they wanted to bring people back together. And he said that there was $100 Canadian hidden somewhere around the town harbor. And so there was like different, you know, spooky tales that went with them. And so they, on May 11th, they announced that the last event would be Friday the 13th, which I think is awesome. Yes. And the extra $100 for the person with the best costume, which I also love because it's not Halloween time, you know, it's yeah. May.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Hundreds of people went out and brought them together. And they said they searched for 7 hours, one guy said. Wow. And it wasn't about the money. It was just about getting out and making new friends. Together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now it's turned into a big thing. They all came together. He did warn hunters that anyone with a heart condition should refrain from participating for risk of becoming startled with spooky conditions. So yeah, it's just, he just really felt passionate about bringing people together, and everybody loved it. So I thought that was kind of a fun, unique.
I think that's fabulous. And my head is spinning on how I can make something like that happen here in Spartanburg where I live. Maybe using the Goose Chase app.
There you go.
That I keep renewing my subscription to, even though I don't use it, but I keep paying the money for it. So I do use it. I use it, but it's only like a couple of times a year that I use it, but I want to use it more. And that sounds like a great opportunity to, that sounds so much fun. And a little, a fact about me that maybe your listeners don't know, but I am obsessed with costumes. I have probably 6 bins of costumes in my attic and probably another 25 hanging bags, garment bags with costumes in them.
No, did you find it used to dress up in the classroom? Do you still dress up in the classroom?
I dressed up in the classroom. I dressed up sometimes for my college class that the one that's in person anyway. I also love to use costumes in a keynote sometimes. I have done a full keynote multiple times dressed as a squirrel with an inflatable tail, mind you.
That's such an odd character choice, but yeah. I love it.
Well, the title of the keynote is Creativity, Courage, and Change, and the Real Reason I Hate Squirrels.
That's so funny.
And it's very random that I added that on to that, because one time, this was years ago, probably 6 years ago, 7 years ago, a district in Indiana asked me to give a keynote at their event, and they wanted the focus to be creativity, courage, and change. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's the title of my keynote. And they said, well, we need something fun than that, more fun than that. And I was just like, all right, just add something like, and the real reason I hate squirrels. And they were like, oh my gosh, we love it. I was just kind of joking when I said it, but they went with it. And then that forced me to figure out why I hated squirrels.
You know what? I'll bet you have a lot of focused people when you're standing there in a squirrel costume.
Oh, look. And I have like a walkout song where I come out on the stage and, you
of
know,
course, you
do. The tail goes this way, you know, it goes up this way. And when you're bopping and that tail, I mean, if you go to my Facebook page, I think there's a profile picture of me dressed as the squirrel somewhere. I did that keynote several times for different organizations. So there's probably a video or something out there in the world of me dressed like that.
If you need that somebody. Is awesome.
Yeah. But my favorite costume, I have a Woody costume from Toy Story.
Yeah.
And there's a picture out. I worked with the Teach Your Heart Out conference for a while. Still trying to get back in the loop. I can't make my schedule work with their schedule here lately, but I'm still a part of the organization. They always have a themed dance at their conference.
Ooh.
Where it's a dress up event. Like one time they had a pink party. One time they had an 80s party, and I dressed up as Richard Simmons. But the Woody was the 90s theme party, and Woody, you know, Toy Story came out in the 90s, so I dressed up as Woody, and there's a fantastic picture. It's one of my favorite pictures of me ever. I was dancing as Woody, and somebody snapped this picture, and I love it.
That is so fun.
Yeah, so I love your good news story. It conjured all these memories of me.
Good.
And now I can't wait to come up with my own little scavenger hunt and do something like that.
Yeah.
Play-based in our downtown area. It would be so fabulous.
It would be fun. And it gets people, like, moving. It's not just a sitting. Yeah, I love that. We do have some holidays. I will say, though, I'm a little disappointed in our holidays. Today is Pack Rat Day.
Okay.
Are we
celebrating pack rats, or are we de-pack ratting?
I don't know. Maybe we're celebrating, but also encouraging them to not be. Like, maybe you get to celebrate 1 year, and then the next year you should no longer be a pack rat.
Yeah, I think you get 1 year.
Okay. It's also National Walnut Day, which I'm not a huge walnut fan.
Me either. I'm not. They're a little dry for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And this one, I was confused. National Idaho Day. Now, was there a national every state day? Because otherwise, like, what makes Idaho so much?
I don't know. I mean, does that mean the only way to celebrate that I know of we're supposed to eat potatoes today?
That's what I plan on doing. I assume that's how you celebrate.
Okay. Well, since the holidays are a bust, let's expand that one, and let's pretend that it's National Potato Day, which I'm sure there's a national potato out there. But let's pretend that is today in honor of National Idaho Day. What is your go-to potato product, side dish, etc.?
French fries, like? Always.
French fries, always.
Mm-hmm. You?
I'm a big French fry person. And we're going to go back to the French fry because I got to ask you about that. But have you ever tried the Ore-Ida Mini Tot? Mini Tot. It's not a regular size tater tot. It is a mini tot. If you have never, look, I'm telling you, they have them at our grocery store. I'm sure they have them at a grocery store near you. Go to the frozen food where the potatoes are, the fries or whatnot, and look for I've only seen them in Ore-Ida. And I'm not a brand ambassador for Ore-Ida. I'm not getting anything. But look and see if you can find the mini tot. And I'm telling you, you just thought tater tots were good. The mini tot is perfect. It is absolutely perfect. And if you cook it in the air fryer, I feel like it's guilt-free eating if you cook it in the air fryer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Somebody in the comments said yes, mini tots. Yes, they do cook.
And Sarah Jesse, I actually work with Sarah Jesse, which means that she has found them in our town. Yes. So,
all right, Sarah Jesse, you have got to get Katie a bag of these mini tots. They're life changing. That's all we buy. We don't even buy French fries for home anymore because we didn't like the way our air fryer did French fries. But the mini tot. Because I think because it's smaller, it makes it super crispy.
Okay.
And they are.
There is a difference. I will say if tots are offered somewhere, like if it's like, you know, you can get tots or French fries, I will lean closer to the tots than the French fries.
I don't know why. The tot draws me in.
I know. What is that? It's basically a mini hash brown.
I know. It's just compressed. It's crumbs. It's potato crumbs that have been compressed into a log.
Right. But now you're taking it even farther and you're saying compress it even more, which is.
Yes, which I know, but Sarah Jesse is going to get you some of
this. Yes, I'm so excited about this.
I know our time is running out. Let me ask you this. So I'm a fry person too.
Okay.
You've got shoestring fries, you've got curly fries, you've got crinkle fries, you've got waffle fries.
Yep.
What is your go-to fry?
Am I making it or am I getting it somewhere?
You're buying it.
I would probably lean probably towards waffle fries.
Okay. I'm a crinkle cut.
Oh.
Do y'all have Zaxby's where you live?
No, but I have heard of it.
Zaxby's has crinkle cut fries and they put just the right amount of seasoning on them too.
Okay.
They're delicious. I love a crinkle fry.
I am very much, I want a crispy fry, no matter what.
Yeah, I want a crispy fry. I like a waffle fry because I can scoop a lot of ketchup. I'm a big dipper. I say ketchup, any condiment, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I love a scoop a lot. And so that is a benefit of a waffle fry. But mm-hmm. I am a crinkle cut person myself. I don't like the ones with the skin still on.
No, that's not a fry. That's just a cut of potato.
Yeah, I don't like those. And no offense to Five Guys, but I don't like their fries.
No, and I don't like the, what are they, like steak fries?
Yeah. Oh, you don't like the steak fries, the fat ones?
No, too much potato.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I think I like those because when I was little, we had a restaurant nearby called Quincy's, which is like a steakhouse, like a Western Sizzler kind of place, or Ryan's or something like that. And they used to serve those kind of fries.
Okay.
So I have a memory of those from my childhood. So I like those. But I can see where it is a lot of potato. You're right. Okay. I love that we took National Idaho Day, and that's how we celebrate it. We celebrate National Idaho Day by talking about potatoes.
This is so much better because when I looked at those holidays, I was not as excited, but you just made me excited.
I raise a glass to the Idaho potato.
Everyone enjoy their potatoes today, whatever form they're in. Well, Jed, this has been, honestly, I feel like I am energized and ready to teach a bunch of middle schoolers today. This has been so fun. I'm glad I finally got to connect with you.
Yeah, me too.
And just, we talked about play and books and advocating and French fries and all the things. So it's been a
dressing up, scavenger hunts, good news. I love it. It was such a great episode. I love this. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for all y'all do to make this happen every day.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for joining us. And you can always catch us on teachbetter.com. You can check us out on our podcast. This will be published soon, but we are live. We'll be live again tomorrow. I'll be back Thursday and Friday, so I'm super excited about that. We've got a great lineup this week, and Ray is still out of town, so the shenanigans will continue throughout the week. So we get to do it.
That's what happens.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you to all of our listeners. Everybody have a great Tuesday, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, everybody.